Welcome to the Caving Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Pelser, chairman of the Central Indiana Grotto of the National Speleological Society. This is a monthly podcast about caves and cave exploration. If you're just stumbling upon us, or you're curious about caving, or what some people call spelunking, we don't really call it that for a number of reasons I won't get into here, but if you're curious about it and you think you'd like to try it, I encourage you to visit the NSS website at caves.org and find a local chapter of the NSS. We call them grottos. From there, you can find out where your local grotto is and where it meets, and you can just show up to a meeting, get some info. Caving is dangerous if you don't know what you're doing, so we encourage you to go to meetings, make some new friends, try it out the right way so you don't have a bad experience. Lots to talk about this month. First of all, this past weekend, I went on my most intense cave trip to date. Here in Indiana, we've got a very famous cave called Sullivan Cave. It's one of the longest caves in our state, just shy of 10 miles. It is an Indiana Karst Conservancy property, so it is managed and accessible by and to cavers. And it was my first wild cave 7 years ago. And, you know, we just did a simple tourist trip, me and Paul Uglum, who was a guest on the podcast a few episodes ago. He's real good at hooking people on this caving thing. Anyway, there's a long portion of the Sullivan map that heads way up north past the quarry room called Beyond the Beyond. It's a 3-mile river passage that ends in a big sump room called the Rise. Chris Parks and I talked about it a few episodes ago, and I said I'd always wanted to do it. He hasn't done it yet. Well, Bloomington super caver Kevin Romanak emailed me after he heard that, and he offered to take me. We were going to do it last month in January, but I got sick and it rained a lot, so that would have made the trip pretty hazardous. So we put it off a month. So last weekend we did it, and I am so glad we did, because we had a really excellent lean group, you know, just four of us: Kevin, myself, CIG Vice Chairman Bart Bridge, former Vice Chairman and current CIG Board Member Charlie Vetters, all guys I really admire and trust and who know how to have a good time in a cave. It was an 11-plus hour trip, and I'm still just as sore as I've ever been, but I couldn't be happier with the result. It was a real test. This was the most serious trip I've ever taken, hardest caving I've ever done by far, and it was a real confidence booster that, you know, I could maybe handle some harder and harder trips. When we finally got out, of course, we went to Denny's and each had a hero's meal. Bart and Kevin took off, and Charlie and I went back to Sullivan to camp before heading to Wesley Chapel Gulf on Sunday. I'd always wanted to see it. It's a great big 8-acre sinkhole in Orange County, Indiana, along the path of the Lost River. It was like 25 degrees and sunny when we showed up in the morning. So there was all this steam pouring out all these holes in the ground. We walked around the gulf. We climbed down into it. We looked into some of the cave entrances. Some of them connect to the 20-mile Lost River cave system that's only been explored really in the last 20 years or so. So it was really cool. And at the southern end of the gulf, there's this big pool called Boiling Spring. And as we got closer, we noticed a whirlpool, this little vortex where the water was draining down into the caves. We could hear it. It was the coolest thing. So anyway, great weekend with great company all around. And I cannot wait to go caving with all those guys again, if they'll have me back. I feel like I was the weakest caver in the group. Actually, Charlie and I kind of had a friendly argument on the way. He was driving around with me on Sunday, and we were arguing with each other as to who was the weakest caver. He said he was. I said I was. I think we're both right. I think at one point we were all, except for Kevin, the weakest caver in the group. But anyway, it was just a great weekend. Of course, if you're going to do a hard, wet trip like that, it's best if you've got a Swago pack, and all four of us did. Swago is a sponsor of the podcast, and yes, Swago has not been able to make packs for over a year due to a supply issue, but Scott is testing out new materials to get that going again. The last round of test packs that he made were unfortunately not up to par quality-wise, but he's got another material he's going to try out, and if that doesn't work, he's got more ideas. So if you want to be a Swago tester, or at least keep up to date on his progress, just check out the Swago Gear Facebook or Instagram pages, or visit swagogear.com. And of course, Swago isn't just packs. They also make chicken loops, which came in real handy on Saturday. Just $5 each at swagogear.com. And if you're doing survey and you use the Suunto KB14 compass or PM5 clinometer or the Tandem, they've got a great product that'll protect your instrument while illuminating it. Swago Sight Light Shields are a thick layer of transparent Lexan polycarbonate that adheres right to the face of the instrument, and Swago's glow-in-the-dark sight lights come pre-attached so you can look through the sight and get your reading without shining a second light through the face. Sightlight shields are just $18. Small price to protect your expensive survey gear. And right now, Swago is offering Caving Podcast listeners 15% off. So go to swagogear.com and mention the Caving Podcast in the order correspondence and just get 15% off. Support the show by supporting our sponsor. And the more business he gets now, the faster he can get his hands on new materials and the better chance we'll have of getting Swago packs back on the market. I cannot imagine doing a big wet trip like last weekend's without one. Thank you for listening and supporting. This month, I'm talking to Ken Bailey of the Fort Knox Grotto and the Kentucky Karst Conservancy, and he was just a delight to talk to and to meet. If you know Ken, you know that he can talk. So he made my job really, really easy. And he was a perfect guest for the podcast because you can really hear his passion through his voice. And of course, KKC's Big Preserve is Big Bat Cave. And Ken is doing a really, really cool project in Big Bat, a digital mapping of the cave using LIDAR. And we got to talking about that later in the interview. Real quick, before we get to that, I've got some calendar notes. If you're in or near Indiana, there's an orientation to cave rescue being put on by the National Cave Rescue Commission, or NCRC, April 8th and 9th. And registration is open for that at ncrc.info. ncrc.info. It's a two-day course. The first day is a classroom day. The second day is a mock rescue. Just $45 to NSS members, and regardless of whether or not you want to be involved with rescue, it'll just make you a better caver. I'm all paid and signed up, so if you're going, I'll see you there. Also, cavers in or near New York State, they're doing one there in May, and of course, the big week-long national training seminar in Bend, Oregon in June. Find more on that at ncrc.info. And of course, I got to plug my grotto, the Central Indiana Grotto, and our annual Cave Capers event, August 4th through the 6th. And we're pretty sure, north of 90% sure, that we are going to be at the Harrison County Fairgrounds in Corydon, Indiana. We haven't nailed that down 100%, but by the time you hear this podcast, it'll probably be official. I'll let you know for sure next month whether that ends up being the case. But put that on your calendar, August 6th through the 8th, Cave Capers in Corydon, Indiana. And there's caves everywhere around there. It'll be a great time, I guarantee you. Okay, thanks as always for hanging with me through the intro. And be sure to stick around after the interview. This month, I'm actually going to be able to tell you who next month's guest is going to be. It's going to be a big one, a big one. That's coming up after my conversation with Kentucky geographer, caver, and all-around great guy, Ken Bailey. And all right, Mr. Ken Bailey, welcome to the Caving Podcast.
Glad to be here. Glad to be here.
And you're with the Fort Knox Grotto.
Correct.
And also the Kentucky Karst Conservancy.
Correct.
Big Bat Cave.
And the NSS.
And the NSS, of course, yeah.
You know, and I do have my toe in the down in Georgia, down with the Southeast Cave Conservancy.
Of course.
I got roped into doing their GIS. And
So you're a member of the SCCI?
Sure. I mean, I'm a member of a bunch of different things.
I mean,
the ones that I pick at, I mean, the conservancy has been really my focus for the last 4 or 5 years. And those two conservancies are the Karst Conservancy and then the SCCI have been really, the SCCI is a phenomenal model on how caving conservancy should be set up.
And it's so worth it to be a member too, because you get access to all those great properties down there.
Well, that's actually changing a little. Their non-members are available also.
Well, of course, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that's...
But it's better to support.
Yes, yes, yes. Course. It's not going to get bigger if we don't keep paying for it.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of property rights in America. If you own it, it's yours to
do whatever you want.
But
in this case, protect.
Yes, and as cavers, we should. Well, and also protect our access.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, there are entities that deny us access. I mean, coming to Harrison Crawford, for me, when I was younger, was a breath of fresh air. I didn't have to ask anyone's permission. I didn't need to know anybody in the caving community. There was no phone calls made. My idiot buddy that came along couldn't screw up access. I mean, you know, it was a great thing. And I really kind of found, you know, Harrison Crawford was a great model for caving, that the novice caver can get into caves.
Yeah, not so much that way anymore. No, unfortunately.
That's one of the great things about conservancies, is now that those entities can't make policies that will shut down our access.
Well, you want to start at the beginning? You want to go back to when you got started in caving?
Sure. I'm from Kentucky, so holes are everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so walking the creeks as a kid, there was a little, he's probably a tiny little thing now. I've been trying to get permission to revisit it, but it's a little tiny cave and it's old Devonian rock. It shouldn't even be there. It probably was a spring that's been abandoned. And I just had to go around the next corner on my belly. And I stole my mom's candles and 'cause we didn't have flashlights. And, you know, my dad, my dad had one flashlight in his toolbox.
Yeah.
Do not take. Yeah. 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 And, it was, I was kind of hooked. And, you know, as I got older, where I was at, there was no parks. It was just the country. And there used to be a way that you could just, you kind of had this, I'll cut across your farm, you cut across mine. It was an understanding. Everybody kind of knew about how things were. And it was kind of an understanding that trespassing wasn't an issue. And as long as you don't break anything or get hurt, you're okay. And if you do get hurt, don't come to me. It's on you.
It is your fault.
Yes.
Don't forget it.
Yes. And, I could go all through the woods and just had a wonderful learning. And then as industry changed and stuff, I wound up living in a subdivision and stuff like that. And so it became even more important to get out, and still no resources to go to. So we would just go out and look for stuff. And Bullitt County, it's south of Louisville, has like three caves, five caves maybe, yeah, and they're all in the wrong kind of rock. So they shouldn't even be there, but here they are. And so I got them all and just would go find them. And then, as I got older, we started, you know, I had coworkers, and it's like, oh, I know a guy down in, you know, in Hart County, and he's got a thing. And so you go with coworker, you know, you start meeting these guys and you figure something out. And then my big break was, Phil Reed. He, was from E-Town, and he had worked at Crucible, which was the only factory in E-Town at the time. So he knew everyone, and he knew every farmer with every cave in E-Town. And he and I just put on a jean jacket and a sweatshirt and a 99-cent flashlight, two of us, you know, and if we didn't have money for shotgun shells, so we, you know, we'd go look for rabbits, then we were in the caves. And, I can remember folding up arrows on Taco Bell packets to point our way out.
Oh my God.
Yeah. 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 So it was.
Well, at least you didn't spray paint your way out.
No, we didn't. There was a lot of fun in that.
Those were the days.
Yeah, well, you know, gas was 40 cents. You know, $3 between the two of you. It was a big day.
Yeah.
So, like I said, it was a great time. And then, like I said, I continued on with, you know, meeting coworkers and our friends of coworkers, or just however we could find a little cave. And the group got a little better, and my brother and some, and just usually coworkers, people I hung out with and worked that I liked at work and stuff. And we all did all that kind of stuff. And it was a ball. We was just a regular party caving.
Mm-hmm.
And no helmets, no safety gear. And then, you know, the upside was we very rarely did caves that we would get to something and say, okay, this is not us. Whatever's there is just going to stay there.
Just turn around.
Yeah, turn around. So, you know, the good side is we only had one. I can only remember one. And I'll, the guy dropped us off on a truck, so we didn't even know where we were. I mean, and we couldn't get home from it. I mean, it took a truck to get back to safety. But, so he just said, I'll be back in a couple hours. And then he throws this big rope out on the ground. We're like, oh, okay, he must not need it in the truck. So, you know, we're exploring the cave, and then we come to this thing, and I'm playing with my camera, and then the guy's ahead of me and going down, and then I hear him holler for his girlfriend. She goes down the slope with him, and then we know why he left the rope. He's like, it's too muddy to get back up. So we all go back out and come back in, and it was no crisis or whatever, no. But it was so funny that this guy left us the gear we were going to need. He could see we were idiots.
He had the forethought.
Yeah.
I'll throw these kids a bone.
Yeah, exactly. He was kind enough to not call us an idiot to our face. I'll never forget his kindness.
But smart enough to, yeah. to know that you were.
Yes. Yes. So he was, like I said, I'll never forget his kindness. And anyway, then that was the kind of stuff we did. And sure. It was nothing special. And then I'd gotten hurt at work, and that kind of had a 2-year hiatus on a lot of things, physical. Mm-hmm. But the upside of it was that I got an opportunity to go to school. And so naturally I wanted to go work at Mammoth Cave. I mean, you can go do whatever you want.
How far away were you from Mammoth Cave?
Hour and a half drive.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it was I'd done every tour in Mammoth.
Right.
I mean, and convinced any family member to go and just some really
any excuse we're going down there.
Yeah. Well, we haven't done this one. and of course this is way before the internet, so you had to do your due diligence on the trip you were on so you would be prepared for the next one.
Exactly.
And stuff. So but that was a cave I had access to, which has always been a important thing to me, is to get that access and to go in there and have and be free to go in and not mm-hmm. be worried about that. That's hanging over your head, that it can be shut down or whatever. And so anyway, I wanted to go down there, and I scheduled an appointment with the personnel manager, and she was kind enough to meet with me and said, don't get a forestry degree and go get an anthropology degree. And like I say, I was just this dumb country boy. And so I just thought it was a checklist. I need a car to get to work. I probably need to leave close by. Oh, and then an anthropology degree. And so I went to U of L and said, hey, I need an anthropology degree. And they said, sure. And put me on the path. And a couple of semesters in, and I realized that I loved what I was doing, but an anthropology degree in the scope of the world, I was probably going to be a bank teller. It was just not, it just didn't, and nothing against anthropologists or there are probably great programs, but this program was in flux. It was a difficult time. It was just a wrong time, bad timing.
Yeah.
And I'd minored in geology, just kind of thinking, well, maybe rocks would be important. And yeah. I'd always collected fossils and stuff. And so I fell in love with it. And
so you just switched.
I just switched it to the major. And then going through that, I found out that I was really good at being able to see in 3D. I'd always kind of had topo maps to be able to find stuff out in the woods and stuff like that. Everybody knows this. Every great adventure starts with the map.
Right.
I mean, you're sitting around poring over the map.
Yeah, just looking at it.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to go there. And then you get there and you realize it's easier said than done.
Yes.
But that doesn't stop you from trying.
Exactly. Exactly. So, like I say, I found that I could do this 3D stuff by looking at things. I have so few talents. And I was like, okay, here's a talent.
I found something in your wheelhouse.
Exactly. Exactly. So the only thing the world doesn't have a monopoly on is hard work.
Yeah.
Anyone can work hard. And so I said, well, here's the only talent I have. And so all I have to do is work hard, and we'll do something here. And unfortunately, my timing sucked again. So, at that time in the world, all of the easy stuff had been found. There were plenty of resources, and the engineers were king. How do you get it out? And so my degree was it was at its end. And yeah. And so I found that, because I'm an eternal pragmatist, geography, the surface was paying. So I just switched to mapping the surface and found enough money to feed my kids.
There you go.
And but I was very fortunate. I got to work at the sewer district, so I got to map a lot of the subsurface. And of course, cave mapping is the way that I can satisfy that frustrated dream. That
exactly. Scratch that itch.
Yes. And so I still get to map the subsurface of the world, and it was just I just couldn't be a luckier person.
Well, so when did you get serious about caving? You played around when you were a kid, and then when you got into a grotto,
what was that? I guess probably around 40, where I had enough money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I started getting in more organized caving, and just have had a ball with it. I mean, it's, you know, like I said, it's, you know, I just couldn't be a more fortunate person. And I don't want to discount the first half. That was a ball. I mean, I love those guys. I mean, and to be honest, that was one of the goals with the conservancy, is to be there for those people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, a lot of people, if you're not involved, you know, if you just want caving as part of your outdoor repertoire, your thing, it's a little tough to get to a cave.
Sure.
You know, it's not just a door that's waiting on you. And you know, with the Karst Conservancy, you know, you can be a member and you can put your toe in the water. Mm-hmm. You can be a dabbler, you know, and it doesn't need to be for the hardcore guy. And this cave, you know, in the first 3 minutes, if it's over your head, it's not going to catch you, sneak up on you later.
Yeah, you're talking about Big Bat, right?
Big Bat, right. Yeah. Big Bat Cave. It starts at a three out of a five. And it goes to a 3.5. I mean, it's not going to beat you to death, but
I'm sure some parts of it could. It's a 14-mile cave. I'm sure there's some tough parts.
Yeah, there's, well, you know, I'm getting old, so the idea of, I've got an 11-hour trip coming up, and oh, you're more than welcome. I will make sure you know the dates.
Okay,
I'm going to make it an open.
If I've got it open, I'm there.
Okay, well, I'm going to try to make it an open, like an open thing for Conservancy members.
Oh, okay.
Or their guests.
Excellent.
And so it's one of our board members, Adam Sampson, had started this and then got busy with school and been very successful. And so I'm going to pick it up, and hopefully somebody will pick it up like Adam did, that's younger, and go to these further outreach places.
Yeah.
But I just want to go back and visit the place too. It's a neat, neat place. It's called the Armory, and it's just this giant room. I mean,
way back in there.
Yeah. And you get to pass some of the prettiest places. This cave, you know, it's an active cave, so it's a flood cave. So, you know, the newer, younger a cave is, less pretty it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's only you're dying. It's just, you know, oh, this is the most beautiful cave. Well, it's almost dead. I mean, it's filling in. I mean, it's dying. You know, it's at the end of its life when it's the most beautiful.
Yeah.
And so it's been a really, you know, there's a really pretty place that you capture on the way through. And
man,
you can see a remnant. And then the reason that is that there's another cave above it was from a previous cave building episode. So we're looking at this ancient thing killing the modern.
Is there access, or is that just theoretical?
Well, I mean,
it's part of the cave.
Well, no, it's a separate system. It was built system. Built in an earlier cave building episode,
but it's above it in the sort of
is it, it's yes it's directly above it. It's really kind of cool. There's some pits there and some domes and
so
stuff.
You can't access it then.
No, it's a separate event, but you've got all this paleo solution channels, and there was really neat. I mean, if you can wade through it. Angela George wrote some really great papers on it, but they're a tough read.
Ah,
so
what? Scientist?
He's just so much smarter than me that it's just
it's journal type stuff and not exactly trip report material.
Yeah. By the time I'm done questioning him, he's got me by my lapel screaming the answer at me as if somehow that will make me understand it better. But, and I could go on for hours just on what I've learned from building on his work.
Yeah.
I mean, his work is what I discovered that made Big Bat, and not just Big Bat, but Breckinridge County. There's three or four 14-mile caves. Thornhill down the street, 17 miles. And so there's some really awesome caves in this area that just has nothing like I'd ever seen before.
Yeah, well, it's just the right kind of rock.
Well, it's not just that, but there's this Bethel Channel that cuts through the uplift. And the Sandstone Channel, which is this wonderful aquifer, allows huge amounts of water to cut through this natural dam. And then it's a fault. You've got the Rough River fault area down there. So you've got all these cracks to let it through.
The water's got to go
somewhere. It's got to go somewhere. and of course, it's on the edge of the dome on the Cincinnati Arch. So water's running downhill, which cuts your beautiful canyons. And just, I mean, I just, every time I look at the geology of it, I just, oh, yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. The answer's right there. And it's just like, really remarkable place.
Mm.
I just couldn't be more fortunate to be able to go see it.
Yeah. And what a great cave for the KKC to have.
Well, just for
it's
anybody.
A great example.
Yeah. Just anybody to put back.
Yeah.
I mean, we're setting it back for, you know, I mean, I'm a grandfather now, and when my granddaughter is showing her kids, then we've succeeded.
Yeah, exactly. You got to keep that going.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's got access to it, and it's still a protected place, and it's, you know, it'll still be remarkable.
Yeah. What other caves really do it for you down there in your area?
Well, I mean, Wonderland Cavern is me and Phil's first cave. So, yeah. So 30, 35 years of going there. The owner has passed and his son inherited it and said, well, my dad treated you like gold. Come back anytime.
I'll do the same.
Come back anytime.
That's a beautiful
thing. Come back anytime. And, you know, and that landowner relationship stuff is so important, and you've got to budget the time and really invest in that owner's friendship. That's an important thing. It can't be a frivolous, inauthentic thing. That's just not fair to them. Mm-mm. You know, like I say, I'm from that part of the world, so they're my people, and they'll know somebody that knows me, so it's, they know how to find me if something goes wrong.
That could be one of the most important things nowadays. You know, with all the public caves closing due to WNS, you know, the landowner relations. And if you own property down there and you've got a cave, you probably haven't been in it yet.
Yeah.
And you're wary of letting people on your property. You're already a country person anyway. You went out there probably to get away from people. And here you got people coming onto your property. And we've got to show them that we're normal people, and all we want to go do is poke around in the hole.
Right, right. And we're not going to sue you.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, I mean, but that doesn't mean they don't get sued. I mean, the process, if you win, is still a punishment. Mm-hmm. And all you need is one person in the area to be punished.
Yeah.
And then that word is around.
Word will get
around. Yeah. So it's, you know, and those are often done by non-cavers.
Yeah, who
snuck in?
Snuck in, yeah,
right, right. And so that's an issue. So I'm a cave owner.
you know,
you're a cave owner, actually. You know, a big shout out to SIG,
CIG. Yeah,
you guys have our key. It's your key. It's not only, you know, it's a, and so you know, if you ever want to come down to Big Bad, Charlie Vetters,
I gotta get down there.
Like I say, Charlie Vetters has got a key, and you guys just. Please fill out the waiver.
Yeah, that's important.
You know, and if you want to be a member, just fill out the form, you know. You know.
It was a delight for me to find out that I was already a member.
Yes, sure.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one more thing on your resume, you know. Yeah.
The one less thing to worry about.
Sure.
One less hoop to jump through.
Exactly. So, yeah, we were talking earlier, I'm a snake oil salesman. I'm trying to convince people to pay for something that's unpleasant, dark, and wet and cold. And, you know, and so, you know, the caving community is an easy sell.
You talked about Big Bat and Wonderland and stuff in your area.
Yeah.
What caves will you drive out of the way to go see?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, like I said, I'm involved with the SCCI, so I go to TAG and they'll drop something here and there.
How often do you think you go down to TAG?
Well, I usually go twice a year.
Nice.
Yeah, I try to go. I go to TAG, the fall cave-in, the event, which is always fun. And then I usually do my own trip and meet up with a different one of the stewards of the caves and stuff. And of course, Tumbling Rock I always got pegged when I first started caving. When I got out of school, I didn't have any money and stuff. So I said, well, I'm gonna have to get a job caving.
Yeah.
And so, the Mammoth Cave thing didn't work out, but, I did get on as I'd got my degree and was going to teach earth science. And, the first job they offered me was this adventure-based counseling, which I said, so I could take kids caving and we could do drug counseling? And they're like, here's a bus and a Kroger card and get some gear money, you know?
What an interesting thing. Because I feel like caving is so transformative that if you take somebody in there who's going through some real problems.
Sure.
It's and especially if caving is new to them.
Yes.
You can show them this world that completely blots out the other world.
Well, sure.
You know what I mean?
And you can shake them too.
Yeah.
If they've never been off the bricks, if they've always been in a housing project or whatever, and now they're feeling something different under their feet.
Yeah.
You've got a chance to get in and meet them without their wall up because they're so far out of their element.
Mm-hmm.
And I did two trips a week for 9 months, you know, the school year, for years and years. So, Same cave. I mean, there was 8 years where I went to three caves.
Which were those?
There were two of them were in Otter Creek Park, mm-hmm. Morgan's Cave and Clancy's. And Clancy's was the more advanced kids. That was a bathtub to get in. Ooh. And you would just tell the kids, just go as hard as you can for 12 feet. And if you... And then turn left, because they would just be in a blind fear. But if you hit the wall, turn left. And so, you know, if they didn't know what 12 feet were, you'd hear that helmet hit the wall.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful, it had this wonderful ceiling that was like a V shape. So the further you went in, the further it pushed your head underwater.
Ooh.
And you can't convince somebody that's terrified that it's going to get better in two more feet.
Right.
You know? So.
Well, how much of a bathtub was it? Was it about 6 or 8 inches or was it less than that?
Yeah, it was probably, you couldn't get your head. You was an ear dipper.
I was an ear dipper.
Yeah,
hardcore for a first timer.
Yeah. Well, no, they'd been to the other cave.
Okay.
And they had kind of, you know, you're competing with the thrill of stealing a car.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, risk is what these guys crave.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, you know, let's amp it up, you know? And,
yeah.
And, you know.
Well, that's a great way to look at it if you're talking about at-risk kids.
Sure.
Because it is a thrill. And,
sure.
And if that's.
Well, they're not thrill seekers. Most of them live in a chaotic world. So they're just addicted to chaos. Chaos has a wonderful, it pushes those buttons when you come through it. And so that, you know, it meets certain chemical needs and that can happen to any normal person. It's not just,
I think for a lot of people, caving satisfies that.
Yeah, I think so. It's calming to me. I mean, you know, that's what people used to in the system would say, oh, you're an adrenaline junkie. And I'm like, no, no, I'm not. I'm trying to mitigate chaos at every turn. But, it got me thinking. And what I truly am is an awe junkie, AWE.
Yeah.
You know, that one of the ways for me to get my fix is to take this horrid journey that appears to be horrid journey.
Right,
to me,
right.
It's a exquisite agony.
Of course.
But to see these wonderful places, and then when you get there, you know beyond the shadow of a doubt how meaningless you are in the world. And it's not a concept. It's a knowing.
Yeah. It becomes a truth.
Yes. And it's fleeting. I mean, you can't hang on to it long. And
that's why you got to go back.
Yes. Yes. And you don't get it every time. I mean, there's, you know, but one of the things that I was taught, you know, that I learned from seeing the same cave for twice a week is that you can see that awe in someone, in your client's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
When you bring someone new, they will see it and you are there.
And then you can get it from them.
Exactly. It's a shared experience, and it's even more powerful to me. And it doesn't need to be a connection or, you know, I don't need to get credit for it or, you know what I'm saying?
But that is a great joy, though.
Yes.
Like, I just got my sister-in-law into it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've taken my wife, and she's kind of, but she likes doing vertical. And so that's, okay, I got a little satisfaction from that. But every place I've taken my sister-in-law, she's been like, all right, when are we doing the next one? And I just get so much joy from that because it's like, okay, she gets it.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just really great joy in that.
Yes. Yeah. I've got, you know, of course, I'm very fortunate my wife will go along on whatever project. And I've pulled this out of so many things and that I were dumb ideas to begin with. And she, of course, said it. And, but we've got that. She's like, okay.
Whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, she's very confident in vertical and she's very confident. She can go just about anywhere she wants. And, you know, and so, I mean, I'm very fortunate on that. So.
Well, yeah. What about survey exploration type stuff? What can you put your name on that has really found some cool stuff?
Well, I was very, very, very lucky to work on Turner's Cave, which was a brand new discovery. The door had been slammed shut for 3,000 years. The archaeology the guys had been mining gypsum, and then obviously the front door collapsed, and so their tools they're still, you know, crap in the latrines, everything was just laying there as if they were at work, walked out, the door slammed shut. And
fascinating.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool.
So this was a Native American work site.
Yes.
Essentially.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow. Where is this?
It's out in Hardin County. It's my stomping grounds.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm like, wow. I said, I've
That's, I mean, it's, it must be so cool to, cause you know, in Indiana, we've got these two slivers of limestone, you know, and there's great stuff there, but it's not everywhere like it is in Kentucky.
Sure. Sure.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And of course, my map won third place in the cartography contest for the state of Kentucky. So I'm a little bragging rights there.
I know. Brag away.
Well, considering everything's done on a computer and here's this hand sketched caving map laying up, all the old guys voted for it. It's like, oh yeah. But you young
you got
guys,
that
know,
going for
yeah,
it.
You got, you, nobody knows what this took. So you know, so it was so out of place. But
well, tell me more about Turner's because this is fascinating to me. So you,
oh, yeah.
So you did you have to open it up? Was this a dig project?
Actually, Steve Gray is, and Glenn Turner were the really the instrumental guys on that. And,
okay.
And it was a karst trench, and Steve looked at it and said, "You know, there's a cave at the end of this." And Glenn was in owned an engineering firm and was in construction, and said, "Well, that's no problem." And you know, and it was Glenn's farm. I mean, and the Glenn was so warm and generous to let me map it. And, you know, I got to, I was very fortunate. I studied under Pat Cambyses on cave cartography. And
oh yeah. Yeah.
So, and then I don't know if you guys know, Howard Kalsnitz, but Howard, was my, if Pat was my mom, Howard was my dad on this. And so those two really,
there's a big names.
Yeah. They raised me and, you know, I mean, I was a geographer. I mean, I was a cartographer on the surface, but underground, those are the two people that raised me. And it was a brutal upbringing, but that's how you get good. They were kind enough to yell at me. And Howard's really, I'm a lifetime member of the Kentucky Speological Survey, and Howard's has picked up where Jim Kearns has left off with that, and is really pushing us to have more of a centralized mapping depository and some stuff like that in the state. So I can't say enough nice about him behind his back.
Yeah.
Those guys have been great.
You're talking about getting a central map depository going. Well, there seems to be still some politics that are funky down there.
Yeah, there'll always be that.
Yeah.
There'll always be that.
Why do you think that is? Is people protective of their work and...
Well, and I'm you know, of course, like I say, I'm always going to see the world through a geographer's lens. So how people interact with the earth, and you know, karst topography is the last land anybody gets. It's the hardest to farm. It's the poorest. It's filled with rocks. It's all the good stuff is taken if you've moved to the karst land. And so the people that live there are unique. They're not stupid. They're very insightful on what your motives are. Mm-hmm. They've
got to be wary.
Yes. And then they're good. They're always great people, but you've got to earn it, and it's got to be authentic. I mean, they're, like I said, they're very insightful. Mm-hmm. If they know you're just down there to use their stuff and move on, they can see through you pretty quickly.
Sure.
And then also too, you know, Kentucky is 47th in education.
Mm.
Same with income.
Yeah.
I mean, the disposable income to have a passion is not always there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a smaller, rarefied group that gets access to do these things. You know, of course, the geology thing, they make you study a lot of evolution and all that stuff. And then so, you know, I mean, we were made really to live on a lifelong camping trip.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and this idea of tribe and group, clan and gang, I mean, those are the lowest forms of organization, are, you know, I mean, that's what you can tend toward sometimes in groups. And, those groups kind of give you permission to punish the outsiders.
We're sort of naturally against each other.
Yeah. Or any.
That's what it kind of boils down to.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just one of those little apps that was very useful 12,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And we've not hacked that app.
Yeah.
It takes a lot to turn over a culture. I mean, you know, a lot of us are the Scotch-Irish that immigrated here, and that culture is an honor culture, you know, and so that's a geography culture. I mean, you come from the Highlands, there's only one way to make a living, and that's being a herder, and someone can steal your livelihood overnight.
Yeah.
So everything requires you to react with the harshest.
Amazing how much of that comes from the past we still feel and live with.
Sure. I mean, these were valuable apps for our little computer brain at one time. But there's a lot of leftover software on everyone's computer that's slowing it down. So, I mean, that's just what we do.
So when you're caving, what are some of the highlights for you? Like when you see something and then you feel something, what is it that you're seeing and what is it that you're feeling?
Well, I mean, I'm a... I'm staring at the ceiling continuously.
Yeah.
And I'm watching for that change. Where did something change? Where did where did the life change? Where did the world change? Where did things change? And of course, profiles and cross sections are things. And in a cave, you can't see the profile until you've mapped it. It's just so, it's so big that we can't see it. And so it's, and so those are the things I'm looking for. How did, what's the detective story? What happened first? What happened second? What happened third? The geologist in me is this sequential geology. I mean, we're in Kentucky, we're layer cake geology. Everything's stacked on top of each other by age. There's no secrets. It's all, it's all, the book is open. But, you know, caves are the absence of geology. It's a void.
Yeah.
We're studying a void. And so the, it's the inverse of what you're supposed to know. And so it's fascinating to see, how is this missing? Why is it gone? Where is it at? You know, when you come to a dome room and it's like, oh, okay. And, well, did it wash out? Is the room empty, or is all the rock from the ceiling laying on the floor? Is the dome still here? know, is all the mass still here? And it's just really a simple little trick, but it's like, okay, well, that means it was done mechanically and not by solution, and, you know, not dissolved out, or did it pound out and then dissolve later?
And you know, if it was dissolved, how long could it take to make this?
I don't even think of time. I can't figure that out.
Well, I mean,
yeah. And no geologist will answer me, so you know I can't. they're all too cagey. So, but just the order, I'm just grateful to find the order of operations, and it's just to be able to have gotten to stand next to mentors who have taught me how to read what was there, and be right 40% of the time, and then have a good bluff the other 60. You know, and that to me is one of the things that I love about this, is that I've been so fortunate to find mentors in this community. I mean, I just dropped a couple of names, but I mean, Indiana Cavers, Dave Black has just been, I would not know anything about a flash in a cave if it had not been for Dave. I mean,
he's a hell of a photographer.
Oh my, yes.
He's the man.
Yes. And we're going to go caving this weekend and play with our cameras, but I don't know which day. He said that they gave me the date, but he gave me the day, and neither matched. So, and he's out of town, so he hasn't responded. So, I just gave him both meeting places, and 15 minutes late, he'll know where to find me. He's pretty good in the woods. Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, I've just been very fortunate to have these people, and you know, in real life, you know, you have professional jealousies, people that don't want to tell you anything because that's how they keep their place in the system and all that. But here's been, you know, in caving, it's the total inverse of that.
You have to work together.
Yes. 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 That's, and that's one of the beauties of why I do this. I mean, I have a science permit to map a really, you guys all probably know Jerry Lewis up here. And Jerry, Jerry and I were looking around for an endangered species and all these little holes in Louisville, and my name got given out, you know, hey, Ken will know where this stuff is. And so, so we have been expanding this beetle range, and he's, you know, it's just so remarkable. He's like, hey, I noticed your name on this map and it's not finished. I'm like, well, the state would never return my calls. And he said, well, we can fix that. And
he's like, I know what to do. There.
Exactly. He's remarkable. He just makes things happen. And so, the easy half's done, and the second half is suck mud. It starts at like 2 feet tall and gets small. It's only maybe 100, 150 feet. It's always wet. It's always cold. You're always laying on your side. Oh, and I love teaching new cartographers. So I will lose a half a day's of production to maybe get that new one. And so it's always worth the gamble.
Yeah.
And so this has been a lot of new people. And it's really easy to get to, so time's not an issue. We can go after work. And so it's really easy to get those people that aren't sure if they want to commit a whole week into it and stuff. So every time I've come back, none of the asthmas match up. And I don't want to – I'm like, okay, well, they were new. Maybe that's it. So I watch them a little closer. And we come back, nothing matches up. I was talking to somebody, and they're like, well, I looked at – this cave had been the cold storage for a mental institute. So it had had all kinds of modern archaeology in it.
Fascinating.
Yeah, they built all of these captures to capture the cold water. They set milk cans and stuff like that in there. And had been used as a morgue, you know, and you know, just this huge history.
So it's like a cold trap cave.
Yes.
It makes sense that it's always cold.
Oh, yeah. They've built brick walls to make sure it's cold. And that's what catches the sediment and the mud and all of that stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it's been heavily worked, but it's really cool. There's some really good science going on in there. Huh. And I've met some really great people. Paige is a person, and Gavin Brown was another guy that I've met in there. They're doing salamander studies, and I mean, it's really, really been a great experience.
Wow!
But this cave, I've matched the same 15 shots three times, and every time, and I was talking to Paige Wilson, this one of the she's come on a couple of years, I mean, remarkable artist. I mean, just she's going to be a cartographer's cartographer.
Yeah, yeah,
and. She's like, well, you know, there was a metal track in the bottom of that where they took the stuff in and out. I wonder if it's still under there. Obviously, there is a huge piece of iron underneath this mud, and there's not going to be a single compass work correctly in there.
I mean, I'm
doing back shots that are 10 feet apart, and I'm 10 degrees off.
Well, at least you found the problem.
No, I think I found the problem.
You theorized the problem.
Yes, yeah.
You've hypothesized that.
Yes, yeah. So one of my caving buddies, Ed Berglund, gave me a transit the other day. So we're going to try, since it's all level, there's no incline in this thing, one or 2 degrees. I'm going to try just turning the angle and do it like we did it in, you know, the 70s.
<You know? laughs> Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a great experience.
Yeah,
sure. There's a lot of show caves that have metal staircases where you can't get this done.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can make a technique to get around it, that'd be a cool thing to have.
Yeah.
That'd be a really cool thing to have.
You were talking about some of the sleazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything about caving that you don't like, that you just kind of have to put up with to get to the rest of it? Do you not like crawling? Do you not like bathtubs? Do you not like, you know, traverses? Or is there anything that you just like, okay, I got to get through this?
Yeah.
Yeah? But that's all part of the experience then?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's 100% in my head.
Yeah.
And, It's tied to an outside event, but sometimes that monkey will get on the wheel.
Yeah.
And I'll just went out.
Yeah.
That it's got to be tight.
Latent claustrophobia.
Yes.
So that's the issue.
It'll be, and it's panic mode. I'm going to hurt you, but if you're between me and the door, it's I've got to breathe.
Interesting.
It's the way I mitigate it is just to surround myself with people I trust.
Right.
And so it's not an issue. Being on a trip with people that I can't count on,
mm-hmm.
You know, there are those jerks that have a little joy about seeing you struggle with something and then tweaking it a little.
Yeah.
And that's not cool. those are the things I don't like. I can get through anything if I'm with the right group of people.
Yeah.
Whether I like it or not has no bearing on anything. I mean, you know, that's not the point.
Yeah.
Being in there is the privilege, and to ever forget that privilege
mm-hmm.
is just disrespectful. I'm old now, so the idea of an 18-hour, 32-hour turnaround trip is not doesn't sound fun. Or carrying sleeping bags, or I want to do one or two more before I'm done.
Just to prove that this is not your thing anymore.
just to see that face, that look on other people.
That's,
here's one of those places I want to show you, and then now you've got it
exactly,
and now you can carry it on. You know, it's one of those. I want to give it away.
That makes sense.
It's not a prove or whatever. I'm trying to give as much away as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I'm really proud of these guys is we were very fortunate at the Conservancy to get a grant from the Dogwood City Grotto to start a vertical program. And then, of course, AMAR has been just wonderful on providing training on how to get it done.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, with a 1-2 punch like that, I mean, you can't lose. And so I've got two young cavers that are running it, Tim Miller and Stephanie Stoops. And I pour everything I've ever learned, you know, on vertical into them. And just been, you know, I mean, I'm giving it away. I've got to give it away. I'm not going to do this much longer.
Yeah.
And I'm already noticing myself losing some of that snap on groups.
Mm.
I can't watch everything anymore. I need somebody younger. I can take care of me, people next to me, but that idea of getting the whole group through the cave anymore, I did that when I was a 30-year-old man. And, you know, when I started getting close to 40, carrying 60 pounds of gear because of OSHA regulations out in the woods, just started is, and you know, I was looking around and everybody was in their
20s.
Yeah. And I was like, oh.
Why don't you grab some of this?
Exactly. Well, they would. I mean, I had some really great interns. As long as they were interns. Once they got on full time, then, you know. But, and it's just been, you know, I mean, I'm still friends with a lot of those interns.
Sure.
They just, you can't go through that and stuff, you know.
What is your, this is just kind of a fun question. Mm-hmm. What is your deepest pit?
I guess fantastic.
You did, because you've been to Ellison's a few times.
Sure, yeah, and then, you know, of course, Bridge Day was a big draw.
Oh, yeah.
But I liked, what's the one out in North Carolina? Whiteside's.
Whiteside, yeah.
I found that was more the Wild West of what I remember, you know. And I really like that Wild West that was us.
Mm-hmm.
And, nothing gets Bridge Day. If you've never done it, it's worth seeing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, yeah. I mean, even if you don't do anything.
Exactly. It's worth seeing once. Yeah. It's worth seeing. But doing it's better.
I was
really cool. My oldest kid turned 18 and I said, you want to come? And she's like, sure. Sure. She hates caves. She doesn't want to come. She'll drop off anything, backpack anywhere with me, but she hated caves.
And, oh, man.
You know, but so it was really cool. Letting her go off and seeing that and stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. She's got some really cool life standards to set life by. Well, this is a problem, but you know, I did this.
I think it's pretty evident, but, you know, just in the conversation, but, I guess what would you say caving does for you? Why do you do it?
Well, you know, I couldn't find anything cooler. I mean, I'm stuck in Kentucky. Started out on my dad worked in factories, which meant he was either laid off or we had a little bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
It was never a secure lifestyle and stuff. So the idea that I was going to travel the world was never on the plate. I mean, we had vacations when we had them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea that I was going to climb Everest was an idea that was never going to come. And but Mammoth is the longest cave in the world. I'm basically in Cave City is Kathmandu.
Yeah.
And why isn't everybody bottlenecked there trying to get in this thing? And and so, you know, I mean, I live an hour and a half from
the longest cave in the world.
And so, you know, just I said, well, you know, I could whine about what I don't have or I can celebrate what I do have.
Yeah.
And look how lucky I am.
That's special.
Yeah. I mean, the story, this is my favorite story, is my whole favorite caving story, and it's a Mammoth Cave story. This is, I was down there doing on a mapping project, and most everybody on the trip was college age or 30, you know, in that range, in that range, and they were and Roger Brucker was on the trip, and Roger, wrote the book,
yeah,
and so Roger was an older man and was struggling, and I said, let me carry your pack, help you out. And he griped a little, and then his wife got on him, and then I carried his pack. And so I'm slowed down because I'm carrying the pack, and he's slowed down because he's been caving a long time.
Yeah.
And so everybody took off, and I had this, the guy that wrote the book.
The guy,
you know.
You're back with him.
And so I have this wonderful conversation with a man who has the keys to Mammoth Cave. And so we're wandering through the cave at a pace that's so wonderful. And the conversation is from the most profound to the most sublime to the most ridiculous. It was just the wonderful, I will treasure it forever. And, but the coolest thing is every tour that we crossed, every guy knew him, immediately put him at the front of the group saying, this is the most published author on Mammoth Cave. And we're so lucky to see him. And I'm standing there carrying his bags like Tiger Woods' caddy. You know, I mean, I'm good enough to carry this guy's bags.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I'm accomplished.
Guess what?
Yeah. I have peaked.
That's marvelous.
Yes, yes. That was a crowning experience. I mean, it was just so cool. And you know, as a guy that dreamed of being that explorer and getting to stand next to those guys, you know, it's just been again, what a privilege.
Yeah.
And all I had to do is drive down there and act like I wanted to get along and do what I was asked.
And that's the great thing these days is that somebody, I'm the chairman of my grotto now, and we just had a meeting this past week, and one of the guys said, one of the older guys was saying, you know, we gotta find some way to get young people because they've all got video games.
Sure.
You know, nobody wants to go do this. I think for some people, they're not going to be interested.
Sure.
You know, and history has taught us that because, sure, you know, it's not for everybody, but all you gotta do is get them in there and show them. And if you can sort of wax poetic on how this is supposed to make you feel, then maybe they'll start feeling it and how special it is. Cause otherwise you're just in a dark place underground.
Sure.
You know, and it's kind of cool and it, you know, but you, and then you can forget about it. But if you can really kind of feel what we feel and grow that appreciation, then we'll have the next generation.
Yeah. I'm a little more insidious.
Yeah. Are you?
Sure.
How do you mean?
Well, I've got this LiDAR project, which we showed on. Well, I give them a line on a resume. They get something out of it.
Yeah, there you
go. It's not just the good feeling.
Not just the,
Not okay, you're going to go endure this all day, and then you're going to hopefully have a good feeling out of it. No, you're going to have a line on your resume. You're going to walk out of here and be more valuable to the world around you.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can make you more valuable, then you'll see the value and why this is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an economics thing. We're capitalists.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of capital. It doesn't just need to be money. Goodwill is a wonderful capital. Trust is the exceptional capital. These other capitals that we just take as surface. They're under there though.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I'm like I say, I take probably easily more than half of the people that come on this project are not KKC members. But I don't care. I'll send them a letter of reference. I mean, you know, if you showed up and you worked underground all day and you helped further this project, all right. Yeah. You came and did suck work and were cheery.
Well, let's talk about the LiDAR project before we wrap up. So you're sort of LiDAR mapping significant portions of Big Bad Cave.
Sure. Let's step back and explain what LiDAR is.
Sure.
We can do that. So it's a way of collecting a 3D point cloud. Basically, if you've got a disto, you've got all that data in there, angle, distance, a compass direction, all of that. Well, I'm doing that a million times per square foot.
Mm-hmm.
And doing
so
it.
So you're getting rock detail and everything.
Correct. Correct. And we could have a color data, RGB data, if we had enough lights.
But yeah. No, that's a problem.
But what we do is we'll collect reflective indices. And so we can collect like a black and white photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do it in black and white, which because we just don't have enough batteries. That's just not going to happen.
Sure.
And we struggle to have batteries for the data collector. So, but basically what we're doing is capturing this sphere of data points, which all these points know where they are in the world. And then we collect them. So we've got a data collector on a tripod, and then we set out targets on each end, which are spheres, maybe 6 inches across. Go into the styrofoam spheres that you can buy for kids to make dioramas of the solar system. They're really high tolerance.
Sure.
And they're a lot cheaper than the factory made ones that seem to break in caves. as a guy that broke one.
Okay. Yeah.
And a very expensive break.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So anyway, what you do is you have these targets lined up, and the data collector that we have does 100 feet in any direction, and we have found that 50 feet underground is a more realistic thing. In mm-hmm. total darkness, the laser doesn't do as well.
Yeah, you find you get more detail going 50 feet at a time?
Yeah, well, you've 25 feet on either side of the collector is about right. But we can go up to 50 feet in front of the collector, but it gets a little thin, and when you look at the data, you'll see that.
Yeah.
But you make better time and you get more data collected. So mm-hmm. life's always a trade-off on cave mapping. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
So, you know, detail or quantity and stuff like that. So anyway, the project was started out as a collaborative thing between the KKC and actually just two of us. Ben Shinneberry is with QK4 Engineering in downtown Louisville. And we just started playing with this LiDAR that was underappreciated in his office. And we started, I went to U of L, my old department, and went to the geography club and said, hey, if you guys would like to get a line on your resume and this is how you can do it and show up. And then also through a professional, you know, I was the Kentucky Association of Mapping Professionals. I was very active member in that professional organization when I was had a job. Mm-hmm. And, and so I offered that to the professional community too. So here's a way to build your resume. And then they're in the, they just happen to be in a cave.
Sure.
I mean, they would have taken it. They would have been a lot happier if we'd just done a building and it came with a, they could have walked to get lunch.
Not but so easy.
No, no, no. I'm in, like I said, I'm insidious. I'm in, you know, so I, like I said, I try to be very careful and make sure they know what it is before they get in it. And they got every right to turn back. I mean, we, you know, fellowship is far just as important as leadership. I mm-hmm. mean, if you don't have, you know, fellowship should not be taken lightly. As a follower, you should not give it lightly.
Yeah.
And as a leader, you should never discount the value of what that person is giving to you.
I mean,
that's, you know, if you're going to stand up front, that's there are people who stand up front, and that's not what you need to do. You need to serve the people who are kind enough to let you stay there.
Yeah.
You know,
gosh, that can be applied to everything.
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, but like I say, it's, well, anyway, back to the project. So anyway, we started LIDARing this every 3 or 4 months whenever we could get the machine out and Ben could be far enough ahead in his projects to get a free day. And so and we've never had a shortage of volunteers. We've like I said, it's just this and then of course given the data set to people, it's not a lockdown data. You come and you work and you've got access to the data. It's a, you know, and so you can use it for your projects and you can go to school with, you know, use it for a master's thesis or just an undergraduate project or a high school project. I don't care. I mean, if you've just got a good idea and you want to publish something in the NSS or, I mean, you can't just take it and not give it back.
Yeah.
You know, you're just, this idea that we're just going to have hard, you used to be drawers full of people's maps that no one shared. Mm-hmm. And now it's hard drives filled with stuff that no one shares. And that's not how this data works. If you're going to take it, you're going to give something back. If it it's not going into a hole where you've got it and it's not yours to give away. You earned it. Mm-hmm. It's yours.
Yeah.
And so it's not given lightly.
It's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. And if you want to be part of it, but with your final product is yours. You've taken it and turned it into a new iteration. That you should certainly share.
Yeah.
And then you've earned the right to share. You know, you're not standing on somebody else's work saying you're accomplished. You are accomplished.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, if you want to build it.
And if people want to see some of the fruits of this labor, you've got a YouTube channel that shows a little bit of it.
Sure. Caverken, one word, Caverken. And
really cool videos.
Yeah. Did you see the one of Kinder?
Oh, no, I don't know if I saw
it's
that.
It's like
one.
A 30-second. Oh, okay.
Oh, no, of him getting tied up.
Yeah.
Where was that? Was that at, like, Tag Fall?
Yeah, it was a tag. Yeah, it's like 3 in the morning, believe me.
Looked like everybody was having a good time.
Yeah, yeah. Me and my buddy were, you know, we were like, hey, let's go look for pictures. It's late.
Was that this past year?
No, that was a few years back.
Oh, a few years ago.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
It was sad that they couldn't light the bonfire this past year.
Well, I mean, you know.
It makes sense.
Yeah, they you know, I mean, you got to make good decisions. And,
yeah.
You know, it's
but no, the LIDAR videos are so cool.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
I mean, it's like you're flying through.
Yeah.
And,
yes, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's so, you know, and that's we were doing this once every quarter, and just, and as we got too far from the door, we got to where it was diminishing results. We were working 4 hours to work 3 hours of actual data collection.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I got this crazy idea that if we rented a machine and we just turned it on and didn't turn it off till it was due back, we could just keep running it. And I said, well, 6 hours, if we did 6 hour shifts, we could do 4 teams. We could run this thing for 24 hours. And this idea that we would just rent this machine for 24 hours went along. And you know, I was a cartographer. I had to work with the engineering community as a whole. I mean, you can't, if you don't know your contours, you can't lay a pipelines and things like that. So I was always at the beginning of every project and on how to do things. I was, you know, what's the land? And mm-hmm. so I got, you know, you got a good trust and a good body of work. And, you know, there are people that are easy to work with and people hard to work with. And I was always easy. You're my customer. I serve you. And, which is rare in a government position sometimes.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting at the meeting waiting to meet the guy for renting the LIDAR machine after a year of probing to find it. And it's a guy I'd worked with for 20 years. And so I was...
What luck.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he had the company credit card too for lunch. So I just watched what he ordered, ordered the same thing, figured I wasn't going out spending.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Figured this couldn't go wrong.
Yeah. I'm not getting the surf and turf today.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, you know, went great. And he coached me and we rented the machine on Thursday night. And then on Monday at the end of Labor Day, we turned it off. So we
got
ran it
done.
Yes, we ran it of almost 60 hours instead of the 24 I wanted to run, and collected a huge amount of data for one day's rent on a machine. So trained probably a dozen new cavers that now don't just have a line on their resume. They have a certification on their resume.
Yeah.
And so, wow. But they've paid their dues. I mean, they were volunteers that came on a regular basis, and it's like, you know, I tried to run it like a meritocracy, that if you're of merit, then you get to move forward. If you're a hanger on, then you can hang on till you become of merit. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not running anybody off. You know, I need warm bodies. I'm getting old. That stuff's heavy.
So if anyone wants to jump in and help out.
KBAILEY59 at Windstream, WINDSTREAM. .net.
All right.
And don't put your email in my hand. I've wasted too many hours emailing people, but if you contact me, then I know you're willing to get up and at least type an email in. So we've got to start. So
beautiful.
Yeah. So, and then if you're not in on this one, there'll be one in 3 or 4 months. And then Sunday night, a guy's coming up from John DeRue from Dogwood City Grotto, and we're going to work on the grant and resubmit. We were very fortunate. They gave us, the Dogwood City gave us the first $500 for the grant for the LIDAR project. The Cave of Virginia's gave us a big chunk, and then Cleveland Science Fund gave us a piece to get the ball rolling. Finished it off, basically, gave us the last piece. So all three of those people, the Science Fund people I camped next to at Capers. And that's how I heard about the Science Fund. So, you know, just dumb luck on, you know.
That's marvelous.
Yeah. So, you know, so that was, you know, can't say enough nice about Indiana. Of course, I'm going to step back. SIG gave us our first grant. So all you guys out there in SIG gave the Conservancy our first grant, which gave me the breathing room to quit raising funds and follow these other things. So, you know, you gave me a 6-month break on having to pay for the cave, which gave me 6 months to follow other things. And so it really snowballed in. So thanks. Yeah. Thanks so much. You know, send more.
And absolutely.
Yeah. And that was a tag. I mean, it was, Rand and Greg McNamara and Ron Adams. They were camped next to us and they were saying, oh, I really like what you're doing down there. And we just kind of had this meeting and under a tarp. And then the next thing you know, we're putting it together. I mean, that's just the joy of Indiana cavers. I mean, you know, like I said, it's a breath of fresh air to come up here for me. I'm just
good dudes.
Yeah.
Just lots of
them. Yeah. But I mean, just the way it's treated. I mean, you know, I got my fellow this year and I was really just in awe that enough cavers thought I was worth some sort of achievement award.
Yeah.
And of course, like I say, Dave Black really was pushing it. And then, and all but one of my letters came from Indiana cavers. Only one came from Kentucky. You know?
We're good at rallying behind people we know are doing cool stuff.
No kidding. I mean, I'm just in, you know, just in awe of those, of all those guys that are all far more accomplished than me. They're you know, just done way more than I'll do. And, you know, I mean, just for me, my measure of success is to stand next to someone accomplished and them not run me off. So that's how, you know, that's what I consider a successful life, you know, to be in the company of those people and them let me stay.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how I measure it. So to be in that company is just, I've succeeded just by that right there.
Is there anything else you wanted to cover?
You know, if you're interested in the Conservancy, you know, use the same email if you want, or go to the Kentucky Karst Conservancy website and do one of the generic, you know, contact us thing. And then we got a Facebook page too.
Well, Ken Bailey, NSS fellow.
Yes, thank you.
And of the Kentucky Karst Conservancy and the Fort Knox Grotto, thank you for coming on the Caving Podcast.
Couldn't have been a better time. Thank you so much.
It's so great when someone is so passionate that it's just infectious, you know? I want to go caving now. CIG's got a key to Big Bat Cave, and Now I want to go down there. Hey, thanks for listening. The Caving Podcast comes out on the first of each month, and next month I've got a real treat. Longtime caver, author, show cave runner, Gary Roberson will be my guest. He's written 3 books, 50 Years Under the Sinkhole Plain, about the exploration of Indiana's longest cave, Binkley Cave, and his role in opening up Squire Boone Caverns, redeveloping Marengo Cave, and of course his latest project, the development of Indiana Caverns, Indiana's newest show cave, part of the Binkley system that he loves so much. He's also got another book on the development of Indiana Caverns called The Longest Year, and he's also got a book on the geology of Binkley Cave, all three of which you can find on Amazon or order them through the Indiana Caverns website. I am so glad I got the chance to talk to him, and I cannot wait for you to hear that one next month. Until then, support the podcast by supporting our sponsor, Swago. Remember, Caving Podcast listeners get 15% off for a limited time if you mention the Caving Podcast in your correspondence when you order at swagogear.com. I'm Matt Pelser, chairman of the Central Indiana Grotto. Until next time, kill nothing but time.